It's just Marina Rav Shlita. This week is Parshas Zohar. Sunday will be Purim, and we have a mitzvah to remember what Amalek did to us. And the Gemara Megillah Yud Ches says, when you remember Zohar Yachol Belev, I might think it's just in the heart. No, says the Gemara, it's prepared. You have to actually state with the Parshas Zohar what Amalek did to us. And the various Mefarshim say that by reading Parshas Zohar, you are effectively carrying out the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, of obliterating Amalek. It counts. The Chasam Sofer brings this down, and others, that we are doing away with Amalek that way. But one of my central questions today is, without giving a lesson in sociology, is why do Amalek hate us so much? And there are lots of other anti-Semites who are not Amalek. What have we done to them that we deserve such hate? What is the rationale? And in trying to give some sort of rhyme and reason to it, you know, we've just been wearing out a tefillin which have on it the Shel Rosh and the Shel Yad. Judaism is a combination of intellect and also the Shel Yad. The hand is what does things. The Shel Yad is next to the heart. It's the emotion. And what we've often tried to do in our shirim is give ourselves an understanding of something, an appreciation of something. Even a few months ago when we spoke about shatnas, which is a chok, the Torah doesn't give reasons for a chok. We still try to give some sort of rationale so that we can have some sort of human, westernized understanding for what Hashem expects of us. But what is the rationale of Amalek? Why does Amalek hate us so much? That we come out of Mitzrayim and all the peoples of the world have heard about what's happened, that there were the 10 plagues, that the crossing of the Red Sea, Hashem did nisin negloim. Everybody knew that Hashem was on our side, and yet, irrationally, along comes Amalek, and the Midrash says they travelled an enormous distance to come out and fight against us. Unprovoked. Why did they do it? What is the logic in the story of Purim to kill every single Jew in 127 countries? And when you read Megillas Esther, why did Haman make the decree? Or the excuse that he gave was because Mordechai, a single Jew, refused to bow down to him. And you read the text, and as a result of that action, Haman says, I'm going to kill all the Jews in 127 countries. Where is the logic? And if we come down further, more to our parents' generation, what is the logic of killing 6 million Jews? And if I may just refer to the handout which you've got on you on the English side, on the bottom right-hand corner, a statement by Aaron Breitbart of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. With the Nazi invasion of Hungary, top German military officers determined that railway lines must be prioritized to transport vital troops and equipment to the battlefront. The Wehrmacht urged Hitler to provide this infusion of desperately needed supplies. Ignoring their warnings, Hitler instead gave orders to allocate the precious rail lines to deport hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews en masse to extermination camps. Historians acknowledge this decision as a key factor in further debilitating the German war effort. For Hitler, the main thing wasn't to win the war. Hitler, it seems, regarded the killing of Jews even more important than winning World War II. Where is the logic? The answer, which I found which satisfies me most, is one which is not really an answer at all, that there is no logic. The Maharal says this, the Maharal of Prague, in a number of places, with the help of Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, I found some references on this in the Maharal, in Gevuras Hashem Perek Chaf Dalad, and in the Sefer Aruch Chodosh, which he writes on the Gilas Esther, he says, Sino ein tam badovor, there is no reason for this hate. Hisnagdus atzmi, a pure, simple opposition against the Jews. Why? There's no reason. Although we can bring a sifri in Bahalosah Chaf Dalad, Halacha Yedua, Esav Sonei Es Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. halacha you do it. Halacha is usually a din, a way of carrying out something according to the Shulchan Aruch. Here, halacha seems to mean something like a law of physics. It's a metzius. It's something which occurs that Esav hates Yaakov. It's a fact. We can't rationalize it. We can't give a reason to it. So however much we can try giving reasons to other mitzvahs, even shatnas, we cannot give a reason why they want to kill us out. But we have a mitzvah to remember what he did to us. And that remembering gives us our strength in Avodas Hashem for a number of reasons which we're going to discuss. And it's not just Amalek. Bereishis Rabba in Samach Gimel Tes says, V'chol ha'umos sonos es Yisrael, all the peoples hate the Jews. And we want to try and understand something like this. As I said, we don't want a lesson in sociology, but the historians try and give certain reasons why these peoples hate the Jews. Number one, they say, oh, it's economic, because they say the Jews are rich and they want power. But this is a paradox. The Jews in 17th century Poland were poor and they were without influence and they were still hated. Ah, they say, it's because you regard yourselves as the chosen people. There were Jews who went off the rails who didn't regard themselves as chosen. The Reform wanted to deny that they were chosen, and they assimilated, and yet they were still hated, and they were still fished out by Hitler. And the Christians, the Muslims, they all regard themselves as the chosen. But are they hated the same way as we are? There are paradoxes all the way through. Another reason given by them is, oh, the Jews are the scapegoats. Okay, but it's the anti-Semitism which is causing the reason for scapegoats. It's not the scapegoat causing the anti-Semitism. And then there's another idea, the deicide. They say, oh, we killed Yeshu, we killed their God. The Vatican came out already a long time ago, in 1963, declaring that the Jews did not kill Jesus. Does that then lessen the anti-Semitism since then? It seems to have increased. Oh, the Jews are different. They always like to be different. And that's the words of Haman in the Megillah. But Dostehem, Shonos, Mikolom, their religion, they're different to everybody else. Rashi says, we survived Golos Mitzrayim because we kept the same names and the same clothes and the same language. Okay, so we're different. But did the Nazis hate us because we're different? They hated us because we were trying to be like them. They said that we were infecting the Aryan race with inferior genes, and that they would trace back people who were completely non-observant through generations and stamp a red J in their passport. I've still got my mother's own passport from Germany with a swastika on it, and there's a red J, and she's given a middle name, Sarah. Her name wasn't really Sarah. Her mother also, middle name Sarah, and my grandfather, whose passport I've got, Max Israel Goldschmidt. Everyone had the name Israel, because those who wanted to assimilate were reminded by Hitler that however much you try and adopt non-Jewish names, we will make sure you have a Jewish one. So there are paradoxes all the way through. My wife's grandfather had medals from Germany for fighting for the Germans in the First World War. He had medals. He said it could never happen to me, and he was gassed at Auschwitz just like everybody else was. And another reason historians give is, well, racial theory, inferior. But, you know, anybody can become a Jew. So it's not a race, Judaism. So we got so many paradoxes in anti-Semitism which we just cannot understand, which fits in with what the Maharal is saying. There is no reason. They call the Jews lazy and inferior, and then they say they call the Jews dominating, taking over the world. The Jews are different, but when we assimilate, we're talking about affecting the racial purity. We're seen as pacifists, and we're seen as warmongers, we're seen as capitalists, and we're seen as communists. You know, we can't win. And I can quote Lloyd George, Prime Minister of Great Britain, in 1923, he said, there is not one fanaticism as irrational as anti-Semitism. He was involved, actually, in influencing the Balfour Declaration. So, coming back then to our Maharal, there is no reason for anti-Semitism. Can we understand it? Can we try to understand it? If I then just move on and quote a couple of Midrashim, we might be able to come to a little bit of an idea as to why they hate us. My Rosh Hashiva drew my attention to a Midrash in Pekudei. The Midrash Rabbah there, in Perek Nun Aleph, Sif Dalad, says, what is happening with the Jews of the world? sorry, what is happening with the non-Jews, the haters of the Jews? So it talks about Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Loma umos domin la'odom shehoyo sone lamelech. The peoples of the world, he gives a comparison, a parable. Somebody hates his king. What does he do? He can't get to his king. So he goes to the palace and finds it's heavily fortified. He can't attack the king. He wants to overthrow him. So what does he do? He goes to the outer wall of the palace, and in the outer wall there's an engraving of the king's face. And he takes a little hammer and he chisels, and he starts, out of sight from the guards, chiseling away, knocking at the wall, digging a little hole underneath, with the hope that he'll get in. And if he can destroy the wall of the palace, and if he can destroy the palace itself, then he'll be able to get at the king. The peoples of the world, say the Medrash, know that the Jews are the chosen people by God. We are the only people, the only religion who has seen a revelation in multitudes. They don't want God. It's not to do with us. They don't want Hashem. So they realize they can't attack Hashem, so what do? They come for us. That's the Medrash in Pekudei. There's another interesting Medrash brought in the Talmud of Eliyahu, the Eliyahu Rabba, which talks about Amalek being the son of Eliphaz. Eliphaz was the son of Esau. And Amalek asked his father Eliphaz, he said, who is it who deserves Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba? Well, going by Eliphaz's answer, he couldn't have been such a wicked guy himself. Omele Eliphaz el Amalek, he said, B'nei Yisrael Yoshim Olam Hazeh v'Olam Haba. It is the Jews who inherit Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. And therefore, if you want my advice, he says to him, go now and start doing work for them, dig them pits and building works and so on. Give them wells that they can drink from it, that their cattle can drink from it, and if you look after the Jews, then you will merit Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. But when his son heard this, he was quiet. He didn't want to argue with his father. Miyad yotza Amalek lahachriv esa olam. Amalek then decided he's going to destroy the world, not just the Jews. He's going to go against the whole world. That was a rebellion against the answer that his father had given him. And there it says, Vayova Amalek Vailochanim Yisrael Berefidim. As we say at the end of Pasha Peshalach, which we read on Purim morning, they came against us in Refidim. So the Medrash says, why is it called Refidim? Mishum Sherifu Yudei Min HaMitzos. They diluted themselves and escaped themselves from keeping any duties. But Hashem knows what's in people's hearts, and he says to Amalek, Shota Sheba Olam, you fool of the world. You are the one who will be the first and the last to inherit Gehinnom. That's the Midrash in Eliyahu Rabba. There is a Tanchuma in Shemos, which I've come across, which also talks a bit about trying to rationalize things. Why do they go against us? The Midrash Tanchuma in Shemos Aleph Hey says that when Yosef died in Mitzrayim, the Jewish people started becoming lax in keeping the din of Bris Milah. Amru Nihyeh ke Mitzrayim, we will be more like the Egyptians. Kiven Sherokein Heifa Kodesh Baruch Hu Sa'avo. When Hashem saw this, he lessened his love for Klal Yisrael. Hashem was basically saying to us, look, you loosen yourselves away from me, I can loosen myself a bit away from you. Or as the Yerushalmi and Bracha says, you stand away from the mirror, the reflection steps back from you as well. So we were lax in keeping the mitzvah of Bris Milah. The Netziv in his explanation on the Torah on Kiyod al Keis Ko, Chazal tell us in this Parsha Peshalach, Kiyod al Keis Ko is a siman that Amalek is still alive. Hashem's name is not written completely. And only when Amalek's finally done away with will Hashem be able to spell his name properly as Yud Kei Vav Kei. And what does this mean, Yod? So the Netziv says this hand is Amalek's hand, trying to block Hashem's involvement in the world. The Yud and the Hay, he says, represents creation. The Vav and the Hay, the second half of Hashem's name, represents, he says, Hashkocha Protis, Hashem's constant manifestation of his mastery over the universe and guiding it at all times. Amalek, as long as he's around, Hashem's name will not be universally recognized. But why does Amalek hate the Jews, says the Netziv? Because he doesn't want to recognize Hashem as being constantly involved in running the world. He recognizes that God created the world, which differs a bit to what you were saying to me before about that the Amalek is the atheist. The Netziv writes that Amalek says, yeah, I believe in God, just like the bank robber believes in God, and he prays to God that he shouldn't get caught. God, please help me get out of this bank without getting caught. He believes in God. Everybody on a sinking ship, they say, is not called an atheist. So Amalek, says the Netziv, Amalek is somebody who says, yeah, God created the world, but we don't have any duties to him. And what do we say in Aleinu? V'yodatu hayom, and you shall know today, v'hashevoso el levovecho, and you shall dedicate your heart. It's not enough just to know, yeah, I know there's a God, yeah, that's fine. It's to say that I'm going to dedicate myself to his service. And that's what Amalek wants to deny. So the Netziv says, that is why Amalek hates the Jews. Because we are continuing our everyday lives in recognizing that Hashem is the continuous creator. And the Netziv says, only when everybody recognizes that Hashem is one, then the fulfillment of Zechariah, Perek Yodal, and Pasuk Tes will come about, that Hashem's name is completely one. Mitachas Hashomayim.
Initially, I mean, really following on what you're saying, what he said was, God's four-letter name worked, you know, we have God was, is, and will be, Hoyo, Hove, and Yia. With his four-letter name, you've got all those letters. If you've only got the word in the head, then it only works for the past and the future, but you can't get
right.
So it's the same thing he's saying, God doesn't act in our affairs nowadays.
Right, I understand. Well, there's no contradiction then.
Yeah.
Right. And we spoke before about the tefillin, the shel rosh and the shel yad, and the shel rosh is the brain, the intellect, and the shel yad is the hand which does things. You know, we are a people where we got different kinds of approaches, different drachim. We've got Satmar Hasidim and Belzer Hasidim and Gerach Hasidim, and we've got what is generally called modern Orthodox, and we've got the Yekkers, and we've got the Litvaks, and we got various divisions. Our Shel Rosh is divided up. It is divided into four parts. It's got divisions. But when it comes to the Shel Yad, there are no divisions in it. We're all there to do the same thing, and we're all keeping kosher, and we're all keeping Shabbos, and we're all keeping Taras HaMishpacha. That's the Yad. And we cover up the Shel Yad because we should be a bit sinistic about the way we do things and not be show-offs. But you know something? You are forbidden to put on the Shel Rosh first. The first thing you have to put on is the Shel Yad. Because what's important is the Naseh, before the Nishma. So you put the Shel Yad on first, but that's to tell us, because Amalek don't want the action. It's the action which has to come first. And the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he exists, yeah, we know that. But that for Amalek is the first thing. Yeah, I believe. And then he closes the door. Hence this idea of the Vav and the Hay. And the V'yodat Hayom V'asheroso Levavecho. And the word Teshuvah is really Toshev Vav Hay. Bring back the Vav Hay. That when you are doing Teshuvah, you're bringing back the action, the Vav Hay, which is the second half of Hashem's name. Interestingly, one of the things which Chazal bring down about Amalek is that they always opposed, more than anything else, Bris Milah. For them, they wanted to oppose, and Rashi brings this in Devarim Kafe Yud Ches, Chotech Milos V'Zorek Klape Mala, as though they reject it and throw it upwards, skywards to Hashem. And the Tanchuma on Kiseitse says, why just Milah? The Maharal says in El Chodosh, because Bris Milah is unique to the Jews. Alright, we know that the Muslims do it, but they don't do it the way halakhically we regard it as correct. But this is something unique to us. And the Zohar says that the Torah is synonymous with Bris Milah. Since man is created an orel, uncircumcised, there is something incomplete about a person when they are born. That is a symbolizing the whole concept, like man is a microcosm of the world. And when we say in the Megillah, Lahudim Hoya Sa'aro V'Simcha V'Soso V'Kor, the Gemara in Megillah Tesayin says that Haman tried to do away with us keeping the mitzvahs of Orozu Torah. Simcha is Yom Tov, Soson is Milo, Soson Ochi Alim Rosecho, and Vikar is Tefillin. We've just spoken about Tefillin, why Amalek and Esau would hate Tefillin. And Milo is something which is repugnant to Amalek. And it's interesting because, if I may read out to you something which you don't have in front of you, I'm going to read you a quote from Hermann Rauschning, The Voice of Destruction, published by G.C. Putnam, but it's brought in an art scroll and passed through something, or the Encyclopedia of Rit quotes this as well. He had intimate conversations with Hitler, and he said, yes, we are barbarians. We Nazis are barbarians. It's an honourable title to us. The Jews have inflicted two wounds on mankind. One, circumcision on the body, and two, conscience on the soul. They are Jewish inventions. I am freeing humanity from the shackles of the soul, from the degrading suffering caused by the false vision called conscience and ethics. The struggle for world domination will be fought entirely between us, between the Germans and the Jews. All else is facade and illusion. And there you have it, brought from Chazal, how Amalek are against circumcision, and how the Nazis spoke about the two wounds which the Jews inflict on the world, allegedly, circumcision and ethics. We're now then beginning to come a little bit away from the Maharal, who says there is just no rhyme or reason at all to anti-Semitism, to now see these midrashim which Chazal are telling us about why is it that they hate us so much. And this idea of doing things with the hand is also reflected in the burial of Esau. Because the Targum Yonason talks about the story when they were about to bury Yaakov at the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and Esau tried to block entry. He was trying to claim that he was entitled to be buried in there, and not Yaakov. And there the Targum Yonason in Bereishis Nun Yud Gimel says that Chushim, who was the son of Don, and he didn't quite hear what was going on because he was deaf, but he took out his sword and he gave a swipe at Esau and just happened to slice off his head, which rolled into the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. So Chazal tell us his head, because at least he did kibbud av, so he got something out of the deal. But why the head? Because as we were saying earlier, with the Yudke and the Vovke, with the Yudke, he's accepting that there's a God. He has this emunah and belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. But the hand wasn't doing the mitzvahs. And that's the back to the idea of the Yodat Hayom Hashem Yisrael Bavecho. I believe in God, but where the bank robber davens to Hashem that he shouldn't get caught. And so there are parallels between what we see in Amalek in the Torah and brought down by Chazal, coming down right to the period of the Nazis, where we're just singled out because we're Jewish. We talk about the red J on the passport. We talk about the parallel of Bris Milah, then and now. We talk about the illogic that after Yetzias Mitzrayim they fight us, and yet the Nazis would go and ruin their war effort practically just in order that they can transport Jews on the railway tracks. In 1898, an unusual event happened in Jerusalem. It was still under the Ottoman Empire. Kaiser Wilhelm II, the sovereign of Germany, visited the Old City. Actually, he didn't behave very badly towards the Jews. He gave a donation of a piece of land, which is now the Bikur Cholim Hospital in Rehov Strauss. And people went out in their crowds to greet him. He rode in a white horse. They even changed the architecture of the Jaffa Gate in order that the whole entourage can get through. And crowds came out to meet him. And they approached Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld and said to him, "Come, we can make the brocha on seeing Malchus." Because they didn't have Malchus there. "We can make the brocha. Come out and greet the Kaiser." And he said, "No." "Why aren't you going to come out to greet the Kaiser?" He said, "Because Germany is Amalek." This was in 1898, before the rise of Hitler, before the Nuremberg laws, before anything like that happened. He said, "Germany is Amalek." And how did he know? He said, "I know this from my Rebbe, Rabbi Shur Lev Diskin, who learnt it from the Vilna Gaon." How did he learn it? The Gemara and the Gila, Daf Vav Amud Beis, I should have brought a handout, but there it talks about, "Grant not to Esav the desires of his heart," and there it refers to Germania. Germania is the exact word used. And Chazal tell us there that there are 300 crowned heads, 300 princes with sovereignty in Germania. And it's not very well known that from the Middle Ages right up to the 19th century, Germany, unlike the rest of Europe, was divided up into about 300 different states. And the Vilna Gaon, in his Perish on the Mishnayos in the Goyim, Perek Beis, he says there, Germania is really Germania. And that's how Rav Sonnenfeld knew about it. Now this is quite well known, what I've handed out, but for those who haven't heard it, and for the sake of completion, we're going to mention it. You've got in front of you on the Hebrew side, the 10 sons of Homon as written in the Megillah. And there are three small letters in those 10 sons of Homon. Tov, and a Shin, and a Zayin. And if you look down in the Hebrew text, you see some words underlined. The 10 sons of Homon were hanged, and then Vatome Estel Amelech, Imal Amelech Tov, Yinosein Gam Mochor, also tomorrow. Also, the 10 sons have already been hung. Also tomorrow, I'm asking of the king. The king, as we know, is not just Achashverosh in the Megillas Esther. The king is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Esther is asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Please, Gam Mochor, Leis Aseres B'nai Homon Yislu Alo Eitz," that 10 sons of Homon should be hung on the gallows. What happened in 1946 on Hoshana Rabbah? Hoshana Rabbah, which is the day of judgment when Hashem judges the whole world. The Nuremberg trials were finalized and 10 Nazis were hanged. You've got this on the other side of the handout, the headlines from the New York Times. October the 16th, 1946. There were 11. Goering, though, committed suicide before they had the chance to hanging. 10 were hanged. And what happened on that fateful day? There were articles about it at the time in Newsweek and other journals, that when this happened, Julius Streicher, the 10th Nazi, after they had all declared their allegiance to Hitler, he shouted, "Purimfest 1946. Another version I heard was he shouted, "Purim to the Jews." The actual Nuremberg trials took place earlier the year, but because of appeals and things, and for amnesty, they didn't do the hanging until the 16th of October, and that was the day of Hoshana Rabbah. Now the gematria of Tov, Shin and Zayin is that was the year. We're now Tov, Shin, Ayin, Aleph, work it out, 1946. That was Tov, Shin, Zayin. On the Vayah Zosso, the big Vav, yeah. Oh, on Daf Vav in Gemara Megillah. Oh, thank you. Never thought of that.
Normally it's going to be the sixth millennium, isn't it?
Yes. The Vav is the sixth millennium. That's when it occurred. Another explanation. Quite right. Yes, and in the Zohar Bereishis, in Kuf Yud Zayin, says that when the sixth millennium, represented by the Vav of Hashem's name, that again the final hair of the name will be lifted up from the dust of exile. The Zohar says that that Vav and Hay will happen in the sixth millennium. So yes, you've pinpointed the large Vav. It's profound. But it doesn't remove the tsar, the grief. My mother saw her shul in Frankfurt burning on Kristallnacht. It's all right. Fortunately, my grandfather was spared on that night, because when the Nazis came round, there were Nazi neighbours upstairs who shouted to their friends, "Leave that Jew alone, he's a good Jew," because my grandfather always gave cigars to these Nazis. Otherwise I wouldn't be here. How do we cope with this? Somebody once challenged my father and said, "You know, 6 million killed, where was God?" And my father immediately answered, "Where was man?" There's an amazing parish in Vayeshev. When Yosef was sold by his brothers, how could Hashem allow such a thing to happen? I think it's the Sforno who says this. He says Hashem stood by helpless. Why? Because Hashem created free will. Hashem created a world which is fundamentally on the basis that people have choice between good and evil. So Hashem was helpless to stop the sale of Yosef going ahead. Where was man? It was man who exercised free will to do something so abhorrent, so despicable, something which is so hard for us to understand.
If you say that's the reason, then isn't that going along with what Amalek's saying, that Hashem doesn't intervene, or can't intervene in everyday matters? How do you reconcile that?
Hashem intervenes and runs the world along its course. Bechira is another subject which is a minefield of its own. But when it comes to the stopping point of free will, Hashem says, "Right, I now leave the rest to you." But when it comes to earthquakes in New Zealand and Japan, that is divine will. Hashem has reasons for these things. We don't know what they are, and Henry was just trying to suggest reasons. And you know something? I wouldn't try for 1 minute to suggest reasons for the Holocaust, because I know that there are certain Sforim which do it. But if my mother would have read those, she would have burst into tears. There were 20,000 Gedolei Yisrael who were killed by the Nazis. We can't rationalize these things. We have to fall back on the Maharal, who says there's just no rhyme or reason to be able to explain these things. But there is something which I would bring this forward to, and that is an Alshich in Parshas B'Shalach. And the Alshich there talks about Amalek. And he says that Amalek, or Esav, has a tsar, has like a representative prince, Klapei Shemaim. And every time we do a mitzvah, it weakens that sorrow shel Amalek. Every time we do a positive commandment, Amalek becomes weaker. And every time we do an Aveira, it's like a point scoring contest. Every time we do an Aveira, then that gives strength to Amalek. So Amalek is always there. Amalek always hates us. But how strong is Amalek? And we are battling with Amalek in a spiritual way. And every time we do a mitzvah, we are making that Amalek weaker. And the Vilna Gaon writes, on Hakol Kol Yaakov Hayodayim Yedei Esav, when Yitzchak Avinu says, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hand is the hand of Esav, he says, the word Hakol, the first word, is without a vav. You can read it as Hakal, rather than Hakol. Hakal Kol Yaakov, when the voice of Yaakov is weak, and we're not in the Beis HaMedrash, then Yodayim Yedei Esav, then the hands of Esav become strong. But if the voice of Yaakov is strong, and there is Nimud Torah, and we're doing mitzvahs and mice and tovim, then we're just weakening Amalek, and he can't fight us. Says Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman in the Kovetz Marmorim, he says, Kodesh mi Yisrael, every Jew, Sarech limchos chelek hara Hamachuna Amalek, should fight the Amalek which is within himself, within his own body. Shetomen belevo, hidden in his heart. What does that mean? The Kedushas Levi says, B'chol Adam Katsas Me'amalek, in every person there's a bit of Amalek, but Adam is Olam Katon. A person is like a small world. A human being is a microcosm of Hashem's overall creation of the universe. That representative within each and every one of us is Hashem's creation of the world. Hence Chazal say, a person, a human being, is like the whole world. You save a life, you're like saving the whole world. Inside each and every one of us, there is an Amalek. And it's our job to fight that Amalek. And when we read Pasha Zohar, and when we do the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, we're doing it against that Amalek which is in our own hearts. What does that mean? Where we've got this thing like, well, I believe in God, but I'm not quite up to it today to get up and to go and daven. But the yad of the shelad of the tefillin is the first thing. And you have to put it on before the shel rosh. The doing comes first. That is what Amalek is against, the doing, the Maisim Tovim. Amalek wants to reject Hashem's commandments. He says, yeah, okay, Hashem is there. I'm not denying his existence. I'm not an atheist. But he doesn't want any duties. He wants to do away with Hashem's authority.
Is that why he disobeys the Naseh and Nishma?
Yeah. That the Naseh and Nishma is that what we do comes first. If we do the Nishma of a Naseh, if we say, well, I'll work it out first, you'll spend a whole lifetime working it out, and then when you're 18 years old, you say, okay, now I understand it all. But then it'll be a bit too late to start keeping mitzvahs. We keep the mitzvahs from the word go. We accept facts as they are. First we say, Ein Kelokeinu, there is nobody like Hashem. And afterwards we ask the questions, Mi Kelokeinu, there's nothing wrong with being an intellectual. You should question things. It's a wonderful thing. The Gemara is full of it. But let's just first start off doing and keeping things because we're told to do it. Because we have bitachon in Hashem, we've got emunah in Hashem, we're doing it because Hashem commanded us. But we do it. And then afterwards we can have all the rationale and understandings, and as we go along we pick up more and more and more until we appreciate things so much we might do things with even greater fervour. And the Christians and other religions talk about emunah as being believing. That's not what V'yodata Hayo means. V'yodata Hayo means, and you will know today. And with that knowledge you will be carrying yourself forward in order to Hashem's will. And Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein writes, "Is we can't kill Amalek physically. You can't go out in the street and kill anybody. But the ikkar nowadays is to remove Amalek from our hearts. And what is that? And that it mainly, he says, is gaiva, big-headedness, haughtiness. The whole concept of Esav and Amalek and Hitler, Yirach Shemom Bezichronom, is that they're all haughty and proud, and it was that pride and arrogance which gave them their power, but also gave them their downfall. We see this in Megillas Esther, we see this with what we've just said about Hitler. It's the pride and arrogance. V'rom levavecho, says the prophet, v'shochachto es Hashem elokecho. V'rom levavecho is you become haughty in your hearts. The smug, he wrote out the 613 mitzvahs, and he had a dream. And in this dream, it was told to him, you have forgotten to include something in your list of tariag mitzvahs. And that's v'rom levavecho. The ikkah, the main thing in life, is not to be haughty and proud, because that is the characteristic of Esav and Amalek and Hitler, Yirach Shemom. And by bittul of the gaiva, by doing this annulment of the haughtiness and pride which we get, which we see from the Jew haters of the universe, who claim they got a reason for everything, who claim that they got logic in accusing the Jews of being dominant or doing an occupation of land and doing this. They give rhyme and reason to what they're doing because they want to dress up anti-Semitism and make it look rational. But it's not rational. But what we have to do is to avoid the haughtiness and pride, do what Hashem's will is, and then the Shekhinah will come into our midst. And then the Kiyod al Keskol will result in Hashem's name becoming complete. And now when it comes to Purim, the Rashba says in his Tshuvas in Chelek Aleph Sadi Gimel, and the Maral says it's no Chodosh, of all the Gezeiros of Shmad which they've done on us, and in Europe there's been so many expulsions from England, France, Spain, Portugal, they've done so many things against us, and they made so many decrees against us, don't keep Shabbos, don't keep Mila, but there's one thing they've never decreed against us, not to keep Purim. There never has been a decree that you may not keep Purim, and there never will be a decree that you're not allowed to keep Purim. And there's a Chazal which says, we once discussed this before, and the reason for that given by the Maharal is, what does it mean in the future the festivals will be annulled? It doesn't mean they'll be annulled. But it means that the peoples of the world will try and stop us from keeping Shabbos and Yom Tov, Lahudim Harisa over Simcha, that's Shabbos and Yom Tov. We said Torah and Yom Tov, Sosar Vikar, and we said Mila and Tefillin would never ever stop us from keeping Purim. And now it comes to Purim and we're keeping the physical. We get a bit tipsy, alright, so we drink one too many on Purim. We're eating, we're enjoying. Why? Because we were talking before about the Yad, the physical. The head is the intellectual. That's what Esav got buried with. He didn't get buried with a physical, because the Goyim's attitude is, believe in God and then let's go and have a good time. What's Yiddishkeit all about? It's our physical which is turning to Hashem. The hand which is putting on the tefillin. We're running to do the mitzvahs, and we do it when we do eat, and when we do drink, and we do become festive. We make a brocha, we have guests, we're doing it all in the service of Hashem. And that is the thing to remember about Purim. And that is the bittul of Amalek which we will set out to achieve. Enjoy Purim. Have a very enjoyable Simchas Purim. Thank you.